folks, welcome to another episode of Bikes, Burgers, Beers. I'm Big Steph, your host, and today we are looking at some motorcycle news for a change. I haven't done that since, what, episode 3 back in season 1? So, I thought I'd talk about it because, you know, ASEMA, however you pronounce it, a lot of stuff happened there, but I'm going to start with a motorcycle that wasn't there. The Harley-Davidson Evo Sportster. The motorcycle that you could arguably say has had one of the longest production runs in the history of all motorcycling, maybe apart from the Royal Enfield Classic 350 and maybe the 500. But you know what? It's not the end of the Sportster itself. Of course, Harley-Davidson has introduced the Sportster S, and we all know all about that bike by now. Whether you're a Harley-Davidson fan or not, you would have seen it. It looks cool. Arguably, I think it does. And anyway, I thought I'd talk about saying goodbye to the old Harley-Davidson Sportster because I own one and I'm biased and I think it's a great bike. I've been talking about selling it for years and I can't seem to because every time I ride it, I just have a smile on my face. Is it a perfect bike? Hell no. If you ask me, as an owner, I think it's a nugget. It's slow, it's heavy, the suspension sucks, the stock seat sucks. In fact, it's a crap bike, but I love it so much. And it's something about a crap bike that makes it so much fun to ride. It's like getting on a horse that just disobeys every command you've got. I kinda like that. But hey, we're not talking about horses, we're talking about Harley-Davidsons, and arguably they're more archaic than the horse. I think they've been around for what, 35, 36 years in its current state up until the Sportster S was made. So it's been around for a while and, you know, I guess it's such an iconic bike. I know with Harley-Davidson riders, a lot of them say it's a girl's bike. Of course, it's been nicknamed the Skirtster. It's been nicknamed a girl's bike as if there's something wrong with a girl riding a bike. Hey, when I first started riding, I remember meeting women who were 5 foot nothing getting on Yamaha FJ1200s and tippy-toeing them out of the showroom floor. So, whatever, man. Girl's bike? I don't care. I'm happy to ride a girl's bike because I love riding the Sportster. It's a damn fun bike. And any real motorcyclist will get on one and appreciate the quirks that it has. But if you've never ridden one, you know what? Get out there and have a go if you have the opportunity, even if you get off it to say, wow, that is a crap bike. But hey, the thing about the Sportster is that it does bring an end of an era. It certainly was no super sport bike. It wasn't lightweight by any standards. You know, 30, 40 years ago, sure, it was winning at tracks and doing all that sort of stuff. But I think I was reading an article on Adventure Rider the other day who was talking about the end of the Sportster. And they basically said that it was such a horrible bike that what do they say? It was the American-made vibrator. It was made in conjunction with the American Chiropractors Association. And, you know, even before Harley-Davidson made it a rubber-mounted engine and added EFI and, you know, modernized the Sportster, it was it was still a nugget. You know what? I've ridden Sportsters with solid engine mounts and rubber engine mounts, and to be honest, I can't tell much of a difference, really. The great thing I love about it is that it is a basic bike. It's air-cooled, no fairings, no bodywork, and easy to maintain, hydraulic lifters. You know, laugh at them as much as you want, but they're just an absolutely simple bike. Of course, when they were first built, Harley-Davidson had them in 883, 1100s and 1200s. I think there was 1000cc models as well. And these days you can get big bore kits that take them up to 1275cc. Doesn't sound like a big jump from 1200, but it actually gives you significant gains in power. You know what? Even if you left the Sportster alone, it was a good, tough, reliable motorcycle. Mine's got nearly 100,000 kilometers on it, and it still runs and starts like the day I bought it. It's certainly a tractor of a motorcycle and will last forever. The Sportster engine itself is so good that Eric Buell used that Evo Sportster engine in several of the bikes he designed while working for Harley-Davidson or slash Buell Motorcycles. And Harley itself used that Sportster engine for the XR1200. But yeah, look, it's one of those iconic motorcycles, love it or hate it. it was a bit of a pinnacle sort of model in the industry of motorcycling. And it doesn't matter what opinion you have of the bike, it did change the way things worked back in the day. It was just unfortunate that it kind of got left behind in the history of time. And because it's been around for so long, I guess you could say they perfected the ability for the Sportster's longevity. Same can't be said for its handling and suspension. However, you know, I still take mine out on twisty roads, and I can still ride it fairly spiritedly if I like to. But they are a reliable bike. But hey, there's grief in the Sportster community due to the real, in inverted commas, Sportster disappearing from the market. What it has done is spurred on an increase in value for these original Sportsters. And I say original loosely as well because, you know what, our current day Sportsters don't look anything like the original Sportsters from the 50s and 60s. So there's a bit of grief for the cancellation, and for years we've known that emission regulations are going to end up dropping air-cooled engines altogether, especially the big bore stuff. Now I see people talk about, oh, these smaller motorcycles are coming out with air-cooled engines still, especially the likes of Royal Enfield and such. And the reality is that those engines really have a lifespan of another 5 to 10 years before they disappear. Look at guys like Ducati, they only have small air-cooled engines. Look at guys like Moto Guzzi, small air-cooled engines, all disappearing. The California 1400, gone from the market. The 850cc V-twin engine is really their only engine that's left in their lineup these days. They're not making any bigger or smaller ones. And the V100 Mondello, I think it's called, that's due anytime soon, and it's Moto Guzzi's first liquid-cooled engine. It's the way of the future for at least the next decade, up until 2035, when there's a complete ban on production of new petrol vehicles, or IEC-powered vehicles. So the emissions thing has really led to the demise of the Harley-Davidson air-cooled engine. I don't see the Milwaukee 8 lasting much longer either, to be honest, maybe another 5 years, or Harley-Davidson may just let it run out up until the point where they'll start putting the Revolution Max engine into their entire lineup. There might be some bigger bore models, or they might just keep the engine the same and tune it differently, just like they have with the Pan America and the Sportster S. And of course, they've got the new Nightster, I think it is, which has a smaller capacity, 995cc? Same Revolution Max engine, just highly likely that they've just made the pistons smaller and the cylinder walls slightly thicker. But you know what? I do expect some sadness in the next few years as Harley-Davidson produces more expensive motorcycles, because they have talked about that in their press releases towards their shareholders, and further removing themselves from a blue-collar customer base into something a little bit more elite. I also expect, as I said before, the Evo Sportster prices will rise as it becomes essentially what is the next new diner. We'll see how that goes, hey? What do you think about the Sportster? Do you like it? Do you hate it? Well, leave a comment on Instagram. Let us know. I'll put a post up about this later and see what you think. In other news, speaking of Moto Guzzi and Ducati earlier, Bermuda, who hasn't been on the radar for quite some time, however, they do release models every now and then, and they're really, like, left off the radar. Well, they're looking at taking a Kawasaki sort of KX450 based enduro bike and making it a BX450. Of course, Bermuda is traditionally a frame builder who makes significantly beautiful, well-handling frames and chucks other engines in there. They've done things with the TL1000 engine, they've done things with Ducati's random engines, and there's a whole bunch of stuff happening there. Originally, they kind of announced an adventure sports bike with long suspension travel, but aimed at street riding, and I think that was back in December, but it looks like they're going ahead with it because they brought something out and unveiled it at the 2022 ACEMA show that just passed. They also, I believe, did something with the Kawasaki H2 engine, and they've taken the supercharged engine and put it into one of their frames. To be honest, a little bit unfortunate because in Europe they have the 200 horsepower Euro 5 limit because of safety, I guess. But anyway, they're really going to dumb down an engine like that. There's nothing wrong with that engine at all. In fact, it's a beautiful engine. However, 200 horsepower out of an inline four like that, you could almost achieve that with the naturally aspirated engine and probably spend a bit more time tuning it and have less moving parts and make it less complicated. So interesting to see what they're going to do there. But Bimota, funny enough, is actually now owned in part with Kawasaki. So there's going to be a component supply no matter what. I think that's where we're going to see some more Bimotas that are Kawasaki based, or maybe Kawasaki's that are Bimota based, depending on how far they go. But yeah, interesting times ahead there. Speaking of the Italians, let's stick around and look at the Ducati Diavel. It was voted the most beautiful bike at the 2022 ESIMA show in America. Obviously, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I think it's a beautiful bike. So this time around, ESIMA thought that this was a great bike, and I believe they have been giving this award out since 2005. I could be wrong. There was 23,000 votes, and the Ducati Diavel received 36, or just over 36%, I believe, of the votes to say it was a beautiful bike over the 4 days of the show. So yeah, look, obviously that's a judgmental thing. You either love or hate the motorcycle. Being someone from a mechanical background, I also look at the aspects of maintenance and all that sort of stuff because I'd likely be doing the work myself. And guess what? I don't think I'd want to work on that motorcycle. It looks like you have to take everything apart to take everything apart. Yeah. What I will say, though, is the Ducati Desert X seems to be a beautiful motorcycle. And talking with my mate Andy Mancam, who was in an episode a few months ago, he spoke about test riding the Desert X. He test rode the Triumph, I think the Tiger 800, and a whole bunch of other bikes on a certain day that he went out to test ride a whole bunch of bikes. And I think the videos are up on his YouTube channel. Be sure to check them out. The links are in the show notes down below. And what he said in our interview was that he thought that even though the Desert X had more conventional modern suspension compared to the Tiger 800's more modern electronic adjustable dynamic dampening blah blah blah, he said that the Desert X was significantly better handling motorcycle. I have to say, while I was a little bit surprised, I'm not entirely surprised because, hey, you know what? Ducati's always made excellent handling motorcycles, and at the end of the day, your dynamic electronic suspensions and all that sort of stuff, well, you know, that's all great, and it all comes down to how well you've put those in place and how well you've executed that technology. But sometimes that stuff can go wrong, and to me, in my mind, as a as a old-fashioned, air-cooled Harley-Davidson Sportster rider, I have to say, yes, my suspension can use some improvement, but I'd be happy with something conventional with more traditional parts and components and less moving designs. But hey, the Ducati Diavel, however you want to pronounce it, is voted the most beautiful bike. And yeah, good on them. And while I'm talking about that, there was also the new Panigale V4. I think it's the R model. Looks and sounds amazing, of course Ducatis always do, but it's boasting 240 horsepower. Hey, that's... How does that work? Hang on. I just said earlier that the Bimota with the Kawasaki H2 powered engine is going to be restricted to 200 horsepower due to the Euro 5 standards, but then Ducati's allowed to release a 240 horsepower bike. What's going on there? Are they not adhering to the standards? Are they circumventing these rules? What's going on there? I don't know. You tell me. What do you think? So, yeah, interesting stuff happening there. And speaking of the show, look, I'm just talking about all these new bikes that are being released. Obviously, the V-Strom is big news these days, going from a V-twin, the long-lived, strong, bulletproof Suzuki engine that's been around for a couple of decades now, originally out in the SV650 and the TL1000, obviously reincarnated with different power profiles and camshafts, and I'm sure the internals were upgraded at some point by Suzuki, you'd like to hope so. But hey, they've gone to a parallel twin. Now, this is good and bad. Obviously, you're going to miss out on that V-twin characteristic, but at the same time, a parallel twin offers you different way to distribute the weight of the motorcycle. It also provides a more modern package, and with this day and age where companies are all going to parallel twins, it seems like a no-brainer, really. I am sad about that, being a fan of just V-twin engines by design, but hey, parallel twin it is, hey? So the thing about the Suzuki V-Strom is that it still looks like a great bike. It's still kind of got that road-orientated adventure thing. And, you know, that's probably the biggest change about the whole motorcycle, really. The paint scheme and everything looks very similar to the last one they had, which was that kind of like yellow and blue, if you're an Australian, the Parramatta Eels colours. In the flesh, it kind of looks good, but yeah, I'm not really sure about this new V-Strom 800 being a parallel twin. I don't see much of a reason to upgrade to it unless you're in the market to buy one in the first place. But time will tell how well this 800cc parallel twin engine works, because as I mentioned, hey, that V-twin engine's been around for decades and it has proven itself to be absolutely bulletproof. I've seen, well, I'm going to say very little amount of TL1000s because a lot of those bikes got wrapped around poles, but the ones that are still around, often those engines have 80 to 100,000 kilometers on them and are still absolutely running great. So that brings us to my final bit of news for motorcycling. Honda has released the CL500 Scrambler. They've basically taken a Rebel 500 and turned it into a Scrambler. It almost looks like a Rebel 500. In fact, it does look like a Rebel 500. I'm looking at photos of it right now, and it's basically a Rebel 500 with a bit more ground clearance and longer suspension. Exhaust is higher up instead of lower down. They haven't put much effort into this bike. However, I will say, having ridden a Rebel 500, it's going to be a nice bike. Powerful, you know, for a 500 twin, not bad. It's water-cooled, it does the job. But the CL is kind of Honda harking back to the 60s when they had a modern sort of trail bike or, you know, enduro bike back then. But these days, hey, it's a 471cc parallel twin, like I said, originally from the Rebel 500. It's not a soulful engine, but hey, listeners of the show and people who watch my Instagram feed will know I'm not really a Honda fan anyway. I don't think they've made a soulful bike in, well, probably longer than I've been alive. But it is going to be reliable, it is going to be fuel efficient, and you know what? It won't have any issues at all because it's a Honda. The good thing is, being a 500 here in Australia, it'll be learner legal, so you'll be able to jump on it no problems as a learner bike. And I believe they've changed the ECU settings in this bike to give it a bit more mid-range. But at the same time, they've also played with the final gearing to make it a bit more peppy around town. Seeing as it's a scrambler, it's probably going to get used mostly for riding between cafes and pubs and things like that. But yeah, looks interesting. LED lights all around, basic forks up front, rear suspension no one really knows about, so you know, we're just going to assume it's okay. 19-inch front wheel and 17-inch rear, so it's all pretty standard sort of recipe for a scrambler. Cast rims instead of spoked, interesting choice there, going for a retro scrambler with cast rims. But hey, a little bit heavy for a 500 in my opinion, 192 kilos. Then again, it's not really a sports bike, so that's probably okay. Where they save cost is for things like still using an LCD gauge instead of a TFT one, but apparently that's going to work its way down the line of most motorcycles in the next 5 to 10 years. One cool thing they did is it's equipped with a 12-volt charging socket, so hey, that's amazing. Well done, Honda, for that. It's just a simple motorcycle. It's going to be cheap to run. It's going to look great. It does look good. that's really about it. I don't know how much this is going to cost, but hey, it looks okay to me. So folks, that brings us to the end of our news today. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Hope you enjoyed today's episode of Bikes, Burgers, Beers. I'm going to take this moment to say thank you to our Patreon members, as well as our show sponsors, Johnny Reb and Willie the Boatman Brewery, both of them offering you listeners amazing discounts on their products. So be sure to hit the links below and check them out. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to see you later. And remember, keep it twisted.